At that time of the year, at that time of the war, research mathematicians were being drafted for war service, and they had very little to contribute to the production of munitions, but they were just the right people to solve these problems for our company. So a couple of very capable and very resourceful, one of them was a mathematician, Joseph Lehner, and the other one was a research physical chemist with a good knowledge of mathematical theory, Elliot Montrell, were hired by the company to tackle these problems, and they solved it masterfully and proved that the control scheme that the company was proposing to use would work and would lead to a stable cascade, which subsequently proved to be the case. But I had practically nothing to do with that except to tell these fellows what a gaseous diffusion plant consisted of and let them go to work.
But were you not at Oak Ridge when it was finally being put up at the end?
Yeah,
over there?
I was down there. I was sent down there. I'd have to look up the exact date, but it was after. Well, first of all, when the plant was under construction, I was assigned to describe to the operating company for the plant. Kellogg was the designer, which was branch of the Union Carbide Company called Carbide and Carbon Chemicals Corporation. What the rationale was for the design of the plant and what separation they could anticipate in the first stages that they built, things of that kind. We made, based on very limited separation data that John Dunning and his associates had developed at Columbia University on pieces of barrier about this big, we developed correlations that predicted what the effect of pressure and temperature would be on the separation performance of the plant, specified the conditions of pressure and temperature under which the plant should operate, and gave Carbide a estimate of how the plant would, how many stages were needed and how the plant would operate initially, both in steady state and during its startup period. Then when the plant was started up and a building of 10 or 12 stages was in operation, I was assigned to go down there at first for limited visits and later for nearly full-time employment to monitor the startup of the plant and its separation performance and to compare its separation performance with what our predictions were for that part of the plant. And it was very exciting. It's a marvelous experience for a young chemical engineer to be assigned not only to the design of the plant, but also to be intimately involved with the startup of the plant. It's an experience that very few chemical engineers get these days, because if they're in the design office, they stay in the design office. And if they're in the operating division, why, they never see the details of the design and what the reasons were for making certain design decisions. But in my case, I had the unusual advantage of making both the design decisions and then seeing where we were right and where we were wrong. And as I've written in this stuff that I've given you, it was terribly exciting to be down there when the plant was started up. The plant's equilibrium time was some 90 days or something like that, so it would take an awfully long time for the plant to reach its full steady state isotopic distribution. But during the startup stages, why, things happened more quickly than that. It was terribly exciting to see that as stages came on the line, they were beginning to perform not just as well as we had predicted, but better than we had predicted. So there was no doubt that even from operation of the first 100 or 150 stages of a 4,000 stage plant, that the final plant would do the job. And the plant was designed for 1 kilogram of U-235 per day, and it produced about 3 because of the fact that the first data we had on diffusion barriers was inaccurate for a rather interesting reason, which I'll take a moment or two to digress on too. The first work was measurements of separation performance were made with mass spectrometers in which measurements were taken of the isotopic U-235 content of the gas on one side of the barrier and of the gas on the other side of the barrier. And they were put through a mass spectrometer alternately. First, one, say the high pressure side where the U-238 concentrated, and then the low pressure side where the U-235 concentrated. And the measurements were reported, and separations perhaps about two-thirds the theoretical separation, which, by the way, was only 0.4%, minuscule amount, was reported. Well, it turned out that the mass spectrometer had a memory effect and that it retained some of the low-enriched material that went into it, in addition to the high-enriched material it was asked later to analyze, so that it reported a separation that was smaller than the real separation. So we were very lucky that the plant at first designed for 1 kilogram of U-235 per day separated better than we predicted. Not many designers have that advantage. And ultimately produced something like 3 kilograms per day because the barriers were so much more efficient than the limited data which we had been given allowed us to predict. Another example of happy chance.
You must have known Al Neer then.
Very well. Al Neer not only was a good friend, but not only was an associate, but he was a very good friend, and we kept in touch with him for many years later.
We don't have it. I don't have a copy of it yet, but somebody has done an interview with him recently.
Good.
Within the last year.
Good.
So
we've lost track of him lately. We used to correspond at Christmas time, but we don't anymore. I don't remember just why. He had a very distinguished subsequent career at the University of Minnesota, which was his home state. But it was, well, I can't say it was luck. It was probably good selection on the part of the people in the Manhattan Project that someone like Neer was assigned to take on the analytical problems of the gaseous diffusion plant and some of the other isotope separation plants too, because Neer was an absolute genius for experimental research, and he designed several types of mass spectrometers that were very important in the operation of the plant. The one that he was brought aboard for first to analyze the uranium hexafluoride at different stages of enrichment was an isotope separation one, but he used his brilliant chemical experimental instincts to develop what was later called I can't remember what they were called, but at any rate they were mass spectrometers to determine the chemical composition of the gas, not its isotopic composition, but the amount of nitrogen and mostly the amount of nitrogen that had leaked into the uranium hexafluoride because of the use of nitrogen-sealed gas compressors to determine when and where in the plant the nitrogen side stream would have to be taken off to extract the nitrogen, because nitrogen being lower molecular weight than uranium hexafluoride would concentrate in the upper stages, small upper stages of the plant, and plug the operation of that part of the plant. So we developed these, I guess they were called line recorders, which are spectrometers specifically designed to quickly determine the nitrogen content of the gas and instruct the people operating the purging systems, which are located all the way up the cascade, how much more gas to process in order to keep the nitrogen content down. Neer was a very important factor in the successful performance of the plant, both as a just an operating unit without regard to isotope separation, and also for its determination of how successful it was in producing highly enriched uranium. You've interviewed him, or you plan to?
I haven't, but somebody has. I haven't seen a copy yet, but we do have
an interview. He's an important person.
Is there anything? Oh, I know there were several other things, but somewhere along the line, I know that you, because this came about after the war, you were I'm looking at the personalities of the people you and the people you interacted with during this during the Manhattan Project. Edward Teller, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And just if you could comment on those, some of those.
Oh, boy. Huh. Well, I've written up some of what I've had to do with Edward Teller. Let me see if I can find that better than my memory. What point in my life did I run into Edward Teller? Oh dear, I'm afraid the chapters that I want are in my secretary's office in New York. I hope not, but I'm afraid they are. Yep. So I'll have to depend upon a much less effective memory. Get my wits about me. Teller was assigned by General Groves to go around to all of the materials processing plants and determine whether there were any problems that might lead to a critical mass. This was, of course, a quite legitimate concern. And we who were designing, for example, the gaseous diffusion plant, and I guess even Union Carbide, who was supposed to operate it, want to be given information on how to determine how much U-235 at what isotopic concentration would represent a hazard, and what associated materials, such as hydrogen in the neighborhood, might make the hazard worse. All these things were highly classified in those days, and on the basis of compartmentalization of information, were not to be distributed indiscriminately to the individual contractors of the plant. So Edward Teller and, what was the name of the other guy? Very able man.
Not Oppenheimer,
although I did run into Oppenheimer later. Well, I sure wish I had some of these other chapters here. No, I don't get them enough along. I can see his face in front of me, but I can't think of his name. Well, anyway, Edward Teller was the leader of this group. He was instructed to come and discuss with us the proposed design of the plant, look at the blueprints and look at the flow sheets we had developed, and we made the process flow sheets. And the engineering department made some other kind of flow sheets. But at any rate, the other kind specified the size of pipe that was to be used to connect the plants and the horsepower of the compressors that were to be used and things of that kind. And determine where and whether in the plant a critical mass of uranium-235 would develop. The Kellogg Company was not to be given any of this highly classified information because it might teach somebody in the company with the wrong kind of clearance how to make an atom bomb. So I had the assignment of leading Edward Teller through all the flow sheets for the process design of the plant. And Edward Teller was the most, well, autocratic isn't quite the right word. My later chapters I had an adjective to describe him, which was better. But he was a know-it-all, and you couldn't tell Edward anything. So it was awfully difficult working with him, and it was only because he had a much more able young man also with him, whose name I can't remember, that we were able to convey the right kind of information to him so that he in turn could tell us where in the plant we'd have to reduce the size of the pipes or reduce the amount of uranium hexafluoride that was condensed in coal traps and things of that kind to avoid critical masses developing. God damn it, what was the name of that other man? Why don't I have more chapters here?
Well, when you see the manuscript, you can always add it later. When you get the transcript, we can add some of these names later.
But this fellow was a very able fellow and a very nice guy. Have I given you anything already that you have there?
No.
I think we'll have to copy some of this stuff. Oh, here we are. Chapter 10 was lent to Clarence Johnson a year ago. That's why I don't have it. Yep. Clarence was my principal colleague at the M.W. Kellogg Company. He took charge of the experimental work on separation performance and on corrosion and things like that, and I took charge of the theoretical work after the work. But he's got chapter 10. He lives up here in 50 miles north of Naples, but I'm not able to get the chapter for him this afternoon.
Well, that's all right. Any other people in the Manhattan Project days, anyone else that you had to deal with on a regular basis?
Well, after the design was far enough along so that we had to transfer the design information to the Union Carbide Corporation, its subsidiary of Carbon and Carbide Chemicals Corporation, I went down to Oak Ridge and had a number of valuable contacts with a fellow we called Bunny Rucker, and I can't remember what his initials were. I think it might have been C.M. Rucker, but I'm not sure, but everybody called him Bunny for some reason or other, who was very able. He wasn't the vice president, but he was the person in charge of bringing the plant into operation. It was a very smooth transition of information from the design people, myself, others, to Rucker and his operating organization. It worked out very well. And was another example of Grove's ability to plan on getting these things properly coordinated, because long before the plant started up, while we were still designing it, I was sent down to Oak Ridge for progressively longer periods of time to just transfer our design information to the carbide people, get their reaction from it, feed it back into our design planning. Groves did a marvelous job of pulling all that stuff together.
Did you meet with him on occasion?
Yes. He was a very sarcastic, autocratic person, but we developed a very high mutual regard for each other. I think he had a high opinion of what I was doing, and I certainly had a high regard for the success with which he was bringing all these miracles to take place in a short period of time and under incredibly difficult circumstances, because air travel was restricted. The materials we needed were only available with the highest priorities, and he did a marvelous job of seeing that the right things and the right people got to the right place at the right time.
You left Kellogg in 46.
Well, what happened was,
looking at the end of the war period now, and
What happened was that I was assigned to work in Oak Ridge during the startup of the plant. My boss was a very, P.C. Keith was a very brilliant and intuitively inspired person, who knew that it would be valuable for the successful operation of the plant to have one of the designers go down and work with the operator, something which Kellogg didn't usually do, and valuable for me professionally to have seen how all these, they were almost guesses or inspired decisions that I made as a designer of the plant, how they worked out in practice. So he had me assigned to work for the Union Carbide Process Development Organization for about the first 6 months of the operation of the plant. And as I've written in my autobiography, it was so inspiring and exciting for me to be down there as the first stages of the plant were in operation, to see how they performed, not only as well as we had predicted, but eventually better than we had predicted.
What happened at Kellogg when the war ended? Did Kellogg stay in existence, or did
yes, Kellogg stayed in existence, but for some reason the M.W. Kellogg Company didn't want to continue in that line of work. So the key people in the Kellogg organization, many of the key people, were transferred to Union Carbide to help Union Carbide with the startup of the plant, and I was one of them. And some of the other people in Kellogg, headed by Al Baker, who was second in command to P.C. Keith, decided to form their own company to develop processes of military or advanced technological purposes. And many of us were invited to stay with Kellex, which became a separate company from Kellogg, and work for Baker. But I and many others elected to stay with Keith and the project which he had developed in Oak Ridge. So then we left Kellex, and it became almost a skeleton of its former organization, with many of the most original, most able people no longer in it. But it did exist for a considerable period of time, and I don't know whether it still exists or not, under the name Kellex.
Mm-hmm. So the new group that Keith founded, was that called Hydrocarbon Research?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Keith formed his own company, Hydrocarbon Research, and wanted many of us, including myself and my principal colleague, Clarence Johnson, to join him at Hydrocarbon Research, but Groves wouldn't let us do it right away, and we both had to continue to work for Union Carbide until their successful operation of the gaseous diffusion plant was assured. And then there was competition for our services between Baker, then the head of Kellex, and Keith, then the head of Hydrocarbon Research. And I remember having an interview with Morris W. Kellogg, the founder and then chairman of the M.W. Kellogg Company, seeking to persuade me to come back. And I asked him what my assignments would be and whether I'd have the same kind of opportunities I had at Kellex or Kellogg before the war, to do the laboratory work on a process, then take it through the process design stage, and then follow it through operation, which was, of course, very rewarding professionally to me. But the Kellogg Company wasn't organized that way. I'd either have to work for their process design department or their process development department or their engineering design department. I couldn't have this opportunity to see all phases of the work. whereas Keith Hydrocarbon Research would give me that much kind of freedom. So that and the fact that I had the almost an emotional attachment to Keith because of his brilliance led me to take the job with Hydrocarbon Research rather than with Kellogg. And Keith was very good about letting me set up a group at Hydrocarbon Research, which was quite similar to the way I had operated at Kellogg's Corporation.
You had several patents that came out of this Hydrocarbon Research period.
Yeah. One of them, I guess, was on mass diffusion.
Yes. Another one on extraction of deuterium.
I don't remember what, how that one worked.
Well, let's see it here. There's one on gas absorption.
Well, maybe it wasn't a patent. Maybe it was just the development of a process. We developed a low-temperature distillation process for extracting deuterium from hydrocarbon refinery gases and from ammonia synthesis gas. Ammonia synthesis gas was a less suitable feedstock because the first part of the and most expensive part of the plant required that the hydrogen be separated from the nitrogen with not too much of an expenditure of energy before one could then go after the separation of hydrogen from deuterium by fractional distillation. But we did design a low-temperature fractionation plant, and I think I must have had a publication on that. Separation by
okay, number 15. Yes,
water exchange.
Okay,
we did the experimental research for that at MIT after I went back there after the war.
You were also, right after the war, too, you got involved with the Reactor Safeguard Committee of the AEC.
Yeah, that was thanks to Edward Teller, with whom I had had frequent controversy. Well, he was overseeing our design of the gaseous diffusion plant, but we developed a high regard for each other even so.